did want to bring this up before we get into things. This, as we're recording this, this is like breaking today.
What?
So this is like very dated by the time this is coming out. But there's a thing going on within WWE, Tim, that is very, very Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm coded.
What?
Are you familiar with like Ronda Rousey?
Yeah.
Okay, so Ronda Rousey has been going on like news talk shows like to promote her book and talking about like how shitty the backstage culture of WWE is, mostly because of how bad Vince McMahon is. She's mostly just like saying, yeah, Vince is bad because of this and that and this. Well, she also told a story of there was another wrestler who, instead of like going to shake her hand, he walked by, pulled the string on her sweatpants and kept walking by.
Oh my gosh.
And that was her side of the story. But guy's name is Drew Gulak. He's a wrestler from Philadelphia. And he tweeted this afternoon saying, backstage at a WWE event in 2022, I saw Ronda talking with a group in the hallway. I stopped to say hi and shake all their hands. And in an attempt to shake her hand, I accidentally touched her drawstring. Let me find the full tweet. Touched her drawstring. Complete accident and one that I had apologized to her for the mishap. And the top comment on this on Reddit is, this reads like something that would happen to Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm. This is how Larry David gets Me Too'd, is because he accidentally, in going for a handshake, touches the string on someone's sweatpants that is very close to a personal area.
Yeah, exactly. That's hilarious.
No, I was going for the shake. She went high, I swear.
Going for the handshake. There's a bunch of people around. They were in a group. They could all say I was going for the handshake.
Somebody bumped me. I don't know. That's pretty
but
good.
I saw that and I was like, I have to bring this up, especially because we're recording today.
Yeah. Well, if that's the worst thing. It doesn't say, you know, it sounds like a he said, she said kind of thing.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah. Could other things have happened? Yes. Does it feel like there needs to be a full investigation about it? I don't think so. I have no idea. Especially because, yeah, like, even in her talking head appearance, Ronda's, that is, she couldn't remember this dude's name. And I'm like, okay.
Some guy.
So it was some guy, which, I mean, I like Drew Gulak as a talent. That's him. He's some guy.
I think it was Goo Drulak, maybe?
Goo Drulak. Drew Gooey.
Drew Drulak or Goo Gulak. Now we're writing like a Dr. Seuss book.
It was Gru from Despicable Me.
Yeah. I kind of want to make the Elaine / Todd Gack meme of her going, what kind of a name is Drulak anyway? Or Grulak, whatever it is. What kind of a name is Gulak anyway? And Jerry going, I think it's Dutch, which is one of his worst smirks of the entire series, by the way. Every time I see that, I'm like, oh, God, we couldn't take it one more time where he doesn't think he's God's gift to, like, that's not even, the funnier line was Elaine's. Yours is not funny. Unless it was a callback from that episode. I can't remember. All right, should we get going? I forgot we're not going.
Yeah, we're not going. Yeah, might as well.
All right, welcome to No Hugging, No Learning.
It's the show about one thing, watching Curb Your Enthusiasm for the first time.
I'm Tim Murphy.
And I'm Ted Hollowell.
And today we will be talking about Season 10, Episode 8, Elizabeth, Margaret, and Larry. No Oxford comma after Margaret. But before that, what's the deal with stuff from our last episode? The ugly section. We wanted to know if the putter rule that Larry catches Richard Lewis breaking was actually a rule. And according to Appendix 2, Section 1A. So this wasn't in the original rules of golf. It's been something that's been added later.
Okay.
Yeah. Describes the three different types of golf clubs. Woods, irons, and putters. Oh, I think this is actually from the actual rule book, but the putter rule that we're talking about comes from the appendix. A putter is defined as a club with a loft not exceeding 10 degrees, designed primarily for use on the putting green. Loft, I know you heard 10 degrees there and thought, oh, that must be the rule. Loft is the angle of the head to the ground. So it can't be, you know how, I forget which clubs, how familiar with golf are you?
Not at all.
Okay.
I was laughing at the potential of a Leon joke saying, I'll give you angled head on the ground.
So loft is just how much the head tilts back from the green. So if you're, you know, if straight up and down is a 90 degree angle, like, and your hand moves backwards or whatever, that would be, if it goes more than 10 that way. Now, putters can have a negative loft where the head starts coming over the green. You can do that, but it can't be, 10 degrees the other way. Unlike other clubs, a putter's shaft, neck, or socket may be fixed at any point in the head. The shaft cannot bend or change direction more than 5 degrees above the sole. All golf clubs, including putters, must be at least 18 inches long, but there's no restriction on putter length. So maybe you've seen somebody, they have like these 6 foot putters that you know, you kind of use like you're rowing a boat, and you know, so you, those you can do. But I did find, okay, this is in the appendix. It has to be a minimum of 10 degrees off vertical. It's in the appendix to the rules. The projection of the straight part of the shaft to the vertical plane through the toe and heel must diverge from the vertical by at least 10 degrees. So it is in there. I know I included all that nonsense for like no reason. I don't know why, but it is an actual rule. They did not make it up. I don't know if the penalty is disqualification or not. I couldn't find that, but you know, if you break a rule, there you go. What about the bathroom attendant? Adrian Martinez, born in 1972. He's 52, an American actor and comedian known for, maybe this is what I think I recognize him from, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. I think he's the guy that like hangs out in the archives with Ben Stiller in that movie, if you've ever seen it. He's also apparently has a big role in Focus with Will Smith. He's also known for his role as discount double check guy with one time running mate of Cheryl Hines' husband, Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, fuck.
But he's not. He lost out on that. But yeah, so discount.
Wait,
double
he did?
Check guy.
Is that official that he's not going to be a running mate now?
Yeah. I'm happy that it hasn't made news enough that people know it. But no, Robert, RFK picked like a some like Silicon Valley CEO lady or something like that for his running mate. Yeah.
Because what? It was either going to be – who were the two other – the other person? It was
the other person was – oh, Jesse Ventura, I think. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes,
like, just as weird.
I'm glad it's not Jesse either. Like,
yeah, I know. but it's definitely not – Aaron Rodgers was like the – because at least Jesse Ventura had been a – politician, you know, but Aaron Rodgers is like the wackiest thing about that. Like, but yeah, I mean, but this guy has been in a ton of stuff, so you recognize him maybe from Cop Out or American Hustle or Kick-Ass or Amazing Spider-Man 2 or Sisters, the movie with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. I definitely saw that. He's in Office Christmas Party. He's in Renfield. He's in Only Murders in the Building, Inside Amy Schumer, Flight of the Conchords, which I definitely watched, Delocated, which comes up a lot on the show. He's been on Conan a bunch. And coming in May, Ted, he's in Unfrosted,
ooh,
the Pop-Tart story.
All right.
I know.
All right. We've definitely got to do that on the Patreon.
Oh, no doubt.
I think that's the movie that gets us back to doing Patreon reviews, especially since we won't have season 12 anymore.
Yeah, that's true. We'll have to do something. But I think it's definitely going to be newsworthy, and it's going to happen right at the right time. And I think we – and it's like the first thing Jerry's done besides stand-up. And – possibly the season 12 finale. We don't know as of this record. What about Jay Larson, who played the carjacker? I knew I recognized that name, so I wanted to look him up too. He's an American comedian, actor, writer, mostly a working stand-up, but he did co-host two seasons of Esquire Network's Best Bars in America, which was produced in 2014. And he was also in the film The Invitation, which I guess was like a thriller from 2015. He was a limo driver in the third season of Twin Peaks on Showtime, which I've always wanted to go back and revisit that whole series. He's also credited
third season of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, I remember they like rebooted it, Twin Peaks: The Return, or something.
Oh,
like that.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I don't know how many seasons of that they did, but it wasn't many. If it was more than one,
I don't think it was more than one.
Yeah, so I think that's what they meant in 2017. And he also created two television shows for NBC that were not picked up. But it's in his wiki. It's in his Wikipedia article that I like. He also has two failed pilots. All right. Carl played Jane Krakowski's husband in the episode. And I wanted to look him up, too, because I was like, he seems like somebody possibly famous. And he is, too, a American actor in stand-up. Probably best known besides stand-up for his supporting role in the 2001 film Bandits. He was a frequent guest of the Adam Carolla show. he's 68 years old. Also called, he's got a couple nicknames, the Pitbull of comedy, Dale, and Yid Vicious, which I think is kind of funny and, you know, speaks to his, you know, he probably sounds like, probably does a little bit of, you know, insult crowd work and stuff, and also speaks to his Jewish background. Again, longtime stand-up, but frequent radio guest, and he played Joey Bishop in the 1998 movie The Rat Pack, and a character named Slayton in the show The Mind of the Married Man from Mike Binder, a former Curb Your Enthusiasm guest star and fellow HBO show haver. He was himself in an episode of Marin back in 2013. He was in Ed Wood. He was in Get Shorty. He has been in done a lot of voice work. He was in Family Guy, Dr. Katz. You know, we've had a lot of people who have been on Dr. Katz on Curb. The other big guest star from the episode was Nick Kroll, who we don't really have to do a deep dive on because he was already kind of famous from this. But he was the restaurant manager in this episode. And, of course, from The League, he plays a character named Ruxin. Mm-hmm. In the series finale of The League, The Great Night of Shiva, Larry David plays an older version of Ruxin.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, man. There's no way The League holds up without being problematic. But I loved it in ninth grade. I thought it was one of the funniest things. It coupled with Always Sunny in Philadelphia because it had Always Sunny as its lead-in. And it was a great hour of TV.
Yeah. My brother was a big fan too. And it has everybody that I like on it. But I never caught it.
And in off-seasons, I remember this one FX show that they tried to do. It was about two lab testers, and I think it was called Testies.
That was a show?
It was a show, yeah.
I do not remember
it
that.
It was a comedy, obviously. Yeah. It wasn't like a docuseries.
Yeah, right.
But I remember thinking it was funny, but I don't remember anything about it.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, just Google search Testies, Tim.
Yeah, I will.
I think it'll take you exactly where you need to be.
I'll see, but I want to see Testies videos, so I'm gonna Google that. Yeah, yeah. So that's
and,
all.
And you know, it aired after 10 o'clock, so they censored the swear words. So you got to be sure to Google Testies videos uncensored.
Yeah, I'll make sure safe search is off as well. Uh-huh. Yeah, uncensored and yeah. But that's all the trivia. Oh wait, I did have one more little bit of trivia and tip that I forgot. Guest star Jane Krakowski appeared in the original Vacation movie in 1983. She's got one of the famous lines everybody remembers. You know, she says something to her cousin Audrey, Chevy Chase's kid. I think Jane Krakowski plays like, was Cousin Eddie in that one? She's like some redneck cousin of theirs. And she goes, "I French kiss." And Audrey goes, "Oh, everybody does that." And she goes, "Yeah, but my teacher says I'm the best." Or
oh
something
my
like
God.
That. Yeah. As a line, so that's Jane Krakowski. But guest star Skylar Gazondo, who plays Winokur's son, Sam Winokur, I think maybe he appeared in the 2015 reboot of Vacation with
Ed
Helms.
Oh my God! Okay,
yeah. So a little crossover in the Vacation cinematic universe there. But that is truly it.
All right. Any other continuity that needs curbed or anything?
I don't think so.
Okay. Any more news or anything?
I do have a little bit of news. I feel like maybe this belonged in the DTM episode, but I guess we'll put it in the regular feed here just for some season 12 content for people who are listening on the sacred timeline. But it made news this week that Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger was so bothered by the depiction of Georgia and their voting laws during Curb Your Enthusiasm season 12 that he wrote a letter to Larry David about the plot. And it wasn't like a public letter like, ha, 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 even though it is supposed to be kind of funny, because the Atlanta Journal, I think, the Atlanta Journal Constitution, the big paper down there, they actually had to file a public records request to see this thing. But in case you are, you know, not watching season 12 yet, the big plot line is in the first episode, Larry gets arrested under that the Voter Integrity Act or whatever, because he gives water to somebody that he knows that is waiting in line in the Georgia heat to vote. And so Brad, the Secretary of State down there, whose former claim to fame was Donald Trump asking him for, you know, what, the 11,000 votes that he needed to win Georgia. And everyone's like patting Brad on the back because he didn't do it. It's like, wow, the bar is so fucking low for you guys. I can't believe it. Like, you're still passing these shitty voter intimidation laws. Like, I'm not going to give you a round of applause just because you didn't help, you know, Cheeto Mussolini in his coup attempt. But here's what the letter says. "Mr. Larry David, as the chief elections officer for the state of Georgia, we would like to congratulate you on becoming the first and, to our knowledge, only person arrested for distributing water bottles to voters within 150 feet of a polling station. And let me see. We apologize if you didn't receive celebrity treatment at the local jail. I'm afraid they've gotten used to bigger stars. It's the TMZ of mugshots." So that's obviously a reference to Donald Trump getting booked at Fulton County Prison. He said he downplayed the provision as a limited food ban and celebrated the speed of Georgia's voting process under the 2021 legislature, which also implemented strict voter ID requirements and changes to how absentee ballots are handled. And they said, given the obvious concern you have about access to voting in Georgia, you'll be glad to hear that waiting times for all voters, including Leon's aunt, were under 2 minutes, even as we experienced record turnout. Whether wanted or unwanted, I know you received a lot of attention related to your actions in the Georgia election. Believe me, I understand. And while my powers as Secretary of State to perform miracles are often overstated, I'm afraid I lack the authority to grant you a pardon, even if you call me to ask for one. Yours truly, Brad Raffensperger. There was also another reference to Curb in there somewhere. I forget. He like referenced some older episode, but it's weird that he tried to like kind of make it funny and jokey, yeah, but then didn't even release it.
I'm so confused. Does this guy think TV is real?
No, but that's why I'm like, why was it a private letter? Like, you should have made it like a public press release. Like, Brad responds to the thing, but instead they had to like file a request to see the letter. It's written like a funny press release. Like, we want to be a part of this fictitious thing. You know, like, I don't know. It happens all, you know, when a brand offers a job to somebody on a show that gets fired or whatever, you know, like just try to capitalize on some of that publicity and like, you know, people are patting him on the back for this. Ha ha, he's funny. He's in on the joke. And it's like, well, no, it's still a real law, you assholes. You know, it's like, it's still, they're still posting cops at polling stations to intimidate, let's face it, minority voters that, you know, but that's just, maybe that's just my opinion. People probably think in, you know, certain voting blocks in Georgia think it's probably a great law that needed to be on the books. But that's the other funny thing about it. Like, well, you're the only person ever arrested for this. No one, we don't enforce it. Well, why do you need it then? You know,
then why is it a thing? Huh?
Don't try to be in on the joke. Like, I'm never going to forgive you. But
drop the law right now challenge, huh?
Yeah.
Drop the law right now challenge.
Seriously. This is just one guy, but like, I'm never going back to trusting them. Like, if the little bit that I did at all, like always, like never in good faith are they acting. You know, I appreciate that you watch the same show as me, but fuck off.
Yeah.
That's the news.
with all due respect, sir, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, which is not much.
Which is not much respect at all.
Yeah.
All right. If you have never listened to us before, we are not a research-heavy show, despite the last who fucking knows minutes. I don't. Being exclusively research and bullshit. We'd like to have our questions pop up naturally in the run of the episode and assign them to ourselves the week following as though we are giving ourselves homework. I have never seen these episodes before. Tim has never seen these episodes before. If we miss anything, if we egregiously skip over anything, please send us an email or send us a tweet. It's at NoHugging on Twitter or NoHuggingNoLearningShow@gmail.com. Both those links are down in the description, as well as the link to our Instagram, NoHugging_NoLearning. You can reach out to us on there. If you like us, you can give us a 5-star rating and a written review over on Apple Podcasts or a 5-star rating on Spotify. It really does help the show, helps us grow a little bit. We did have a very good March. We had probably double the amount of downloads in March than we did in January, which was really nice. Really
I
liked
saw that.
Seeing that.
We had one of those one day blasts where I'm like,
I want to know what happened. If I go into it, it's going to like throw the record off.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like one day. Oh, here's 300 downloads. I'm like, sick. That's cool.
We'll take it.
Someone's listening to all of our episodes today. Yeah. I'll take it.
Someone's going where there's no Wi-Fi and they want to catch up.
But yeah, you can give us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It helps us, please. If you've already done so and you want to help us a little bit more, consider joining us over on Patreon. It's patreon.com/nohugging, where for $5 a month, you get early access to extended versions of every episode, as well as mini reviews of the season 12 episodes as they are airing. And if you join now, you get the first 7 days for free. You can cancel anytime. I believe there's no commitment at all. I mean, I own the page, so I haven't signed up for an account as a patron myself, but I guess I could try that out. Just sign up with another account entirely and sign up for us and see what happens. See if they take my card info first. But I think it's you get the content and then they ask you for the payment. I have no idea.
try it out and let us know.
Yeah, try it out.
I mean, not you, but somebody who's
listening. Yeah, somebody, somebody, do that. Let us know. But you can join us over on Patreon like these people. Dan, Liam M., Michael Klatsky, Derek Wayne, Nate Collins, Tamara Ortiz, guys and gals over at the Idiotville Podcast, John Murphy, Danica Ligorio, J-Dog Conlord, Nick Kudla, Adam Webb, and Megan Stolarski. Thank you guys so much. But of course, Tim, that's not the only way they can help out the podcast, is it?
That's exactly right. I can't remember to answer positively or negatively to that question. That's not the only way they can help, isn't it? Wait, what? I don't think you said that, but no or yes. You can start.
And or yes. You are correct.
You can start your own podcast journey over at Libsyn, Libsyn. That's the only service I've ever used. We've always been on Libsyn for No Hugging, No Learning, and they will help you put your podcast in front of, next to ears. You don't want to be in front of ears. You want to be next to ears, and that's where your podcast will be. Thanks to Libsyn. Go to Libsyn.com. Use the promo code HUGGING. Get up to 2 months free. And you don't even have to do it. You don't even have to start a podcast. That's kind of why I say yes and no, because just sign up and just pay the monthly, you know, get 2 months free and then just keep paying. But just don't do anything. You don't have to. But, you know, just keep the subscription. I don't know why you do that, but it would help us. But I'm saying if you want to help us, you don't have to, you know, podcast. Just have to sign up at Libsyn.com and use the promo code HUGGING for up to 2 months free.
Okay, with all of that being said, Season 10, Episode 8, Elizabeth, Margaret, and Larry. Original air date, March 8th, 2020. And if you are looking in TV Guide that night, you are going to see a prominent actor studies Larry for an upcoming role, comma, while Larry stokes a sibling rivalry and helps Leon with a new app.
It's not bad. We kind of liked it last time, right?
I think we did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, given what we know about the episode now, I just want to uncover this first. Is it an app?
Right.
Did they pay to have an app developed? Because it just sounds like they printed business cards and got a phone number.
That's the way it's kind of starting. I think they do mention, and I probably didn't write it down, in the initial idea, I think he says, that'd be a great app. But then, I mean, you know, they couldn't develop it in the timeline of the show. So they started this way, you know. But in the future, it might have been if what transpired hadn't transpired. Well, I think you might be right about that. So that may be what we have to kind of tool around with when we get to there. But we'll see. But it is pretty good. We open at Jeff's, and he tells Larry that Hobie Turner, remember the Seinfeld writer? There's no such person that exists, as far as I can tell. Not a real Seinfeld writer. Hobie Turner is doing a movie with John Hamm, and he's kind of playing a Larry David type. So he wants to follow Larry David around, which Larry agrees. Like, sure, yeah, that's fine. I'll hang out with John Hamm. No problem. Set it up. So that's the famous actor. As I suspected, I thought he didn't show up until... I thought this episode was a season 11 episode, honestly, when I saw some of the parts of it that I had seen before. And I was like, oh, I guess it's not. Susie and Cheryl enter, and Becky, Cheryl's sister, is selling the house that Larry and Cheryl bought for her, and the area is actually doing really well, so it's appreciated in value, and Larry's psyched that he's going to make some money, but Cheryl's like, well, what do you mean? Becky's making the money.
Yeah, hang on. I want to make note, because they definitely say the area is nice and it has appreciated in value.
Yeah, yes, they did. Okay, you just want to make note of that.
Yeah, it's very important for later with how they portray the house and it being totally opposite of that.
So Larry is upset that Becky is going to be keeping the money. I think this is a great... ambiguous situation. Like, this is something that, like, you know, people can easily take sides on. You know, like, well, no, you know, you can take Cheryl's side. No, we gifted her the house now that she doesn't need it anymore. It wasn't an investment. It was like, here's a house for you. And she's selling it, and she's going to make some money off of it. Like, if she was selling it as a loss, what would you do in that case? You know, it's like, but Larry's like, well, no, like, it was a gift, and now that she's getting rid of it, the gifting is over. The money is mine. Like, the house was the gift. The money is not a gift. You know, I mean, it's really good. And I like the 3 days. What if she decided to sell it after 3 days? That's a great, you know, taking it to the extreme to kind of make a point. But she'd been there for, she's, I like that he kind of accuses her of flipping the house. And Cheryl's like, she's been there 15 years.
Like, it's not really a flip at 15 years.
I thought that was so funny. That was, I got an early laugh in this episode of that. He's like, oh, now she wants to flip it. Like, she's been there 15 years. And Cheryl's like, well, you're going to have to ask her for the money if you care about this at all, because we're kind of estranged. She has been calling me Queen Elizabeth, and she feels like Margaret, based on, of course, the royal family. And I guess the crown was pretty big around this time, because the only reason I knew anything about the relationship of Queen Elizabeth and Princess Margaret was that that Sarah and I watched the first few seasons of The Crown. And so I guess, and I remember it was a big deal when it came out. I feel like it was before 2020, but maybe it was just like kind of catching fire as those shows kind of do in their second or third seasons. But I liked the button on this scene too, because she's like, well, so you've got to talk to me. He's like, oh, I will. Oh, I will. And they're like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm doing Kramer. Oh, I will. Whatever he says as Kramer, I thought was pretty funny. I don't know why he decided to do it. But, you know, it was an interesting little Seinfeld. You know, we don't get many Seinfeld mentions besides, hey, you created the Seinfeld show. You know, so it's interesting that he's kind of referencing it himself. So over at Twin Dragon Chinese Restaurant, which is still at 8597 West Pico, right near the intersection with La Cienega, it is, according to Google, an unassuming outpost serving Shanghai-style Chinese specialties. Oh, in a serene setting. It's very serene. And there's a great article in, I think it's from the LA Times, I forget where it's from, but about how Jewish people like to go there on Christmas, as is kind of like the tradition, because, you know, a long time ago, those were like, Chinese restaurants were like the only thing open on Christmas, and Jews don't celebrate Christmas, and so they would go out to Chinese restaurants, and so they did a little article about that, and this is, you know, one of the places people like to go on Christmas that don't celebrate Christmas. It's been in that sort of West LA, Beverly Hills area for over 60 years. The official neighborhood is Pico Robertson, according to that article that I read. Larry is meeting with John Hamm there, who is like just eating up the Larry Davidness of it all. The fact that he hates the word appreciate. You notice how people throw that around and they expect you to just bow to whatever they need because they'll I'd really appreciate it if you could do this. And I like that. I love John Hamm in this episode, just like chuckling at everything, like he is watching it on TV, like he's me taking notes watching an episode of Curb. That's the energy that John Hamm brought to this episode. Maybe that's why I appreciated it, because I was doing the exact same thing, chuckling and taking notes at Larry David. But it was in real life to him. Although he is slightly embarrassed when Larry asks Chinese people, or seemingly Chinese people, at a table next to them what to get, because they would know, being Chinese, what would be good at this Chinese restaurant. Which, you know, like, it's one of those things where you're like, I see your logic, but it feels racist, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I'd ask a fat guy, you know, what's good. I wouldn't ask a skinny person what food was good.
I mean, it's definitely racist. It's definitely racist. Yes.
So over at a newsstand, but John Hamm, as embarrassed as he is, he still kind of eats it up. He's like, this is all great. This is all great.
I did love him just like covering his entire face, yeah. but just still scribbling things in his notebook.
Yeah, it was great. So over at a newsstand, Larry David offers to watch it while the clerk goes to the bathroom because he can't leave. He's just stuck there all day during his shift. I could tell when they zoomed out that this was Century World News. I feel like we've been here before. This is like where Uncle Moke and Freddie Funkhauser, where we met them, but we didn't get that great zoom out where I saw the name of the business. So this is still at 10597 West Pico. Open from 8 to 5 every single day of the week. It is, as you might have heard, you know, both of these locations are on West Pico. It's 2.7 miles from Twin Dragon. So I would venture to say they drove rather than, you know, take that walk. Speaking of driving, Richard Lewis drives by as Larry is now working at a newsstand. And I guess it's only happened a couple times that I can think of, but I love how disgusted Richard Lewis is when he catches Larry David like mid-adventure. The other time that I'm thinking of is when Larry was again working at a car dealership and he's like, I had to stop by just to see if this was true. What the hell are you doing? And he's like, what are you doing working at a newsstand? I just love how disgusted he is, you know, whenever Larry is in the, it's probably happened a couple of other times because, you know, outside of employment, Larry gets into misadventures like this, and Richard Lewis happens. What the hell are you doing? he comes upon Larry kicking out a guy who was browsing the magazines because there's no browsing allowed, and he's with John Hamm. It's just a weird situation. What are you doing? Literally working at a newsstand, and John Hamm is just hanging around you. What's going on here? He tells him about the movie that he's doing, and Richard's line here is so like obvious, but it still cracked me up just because Larry and Richard together cracked me up. Oh, what's the movie called? The Biggest Asshole Who Ever Walked the Earth. I mean, it's like this was
so good.
Such a simple dig, but just hilarious and expertly timed, and that's what separates the greats. You know, it's like, oh, what's the movie called? Richard Lewis is dating a new woman, as he is wont to do. Her name is Michelle. She is a CEO. And, you know, he wants to go out to dinner with Larry and her, but Larry says no to the Michelle date, even though Richard says he's really appreciate it. And John Hamm's like, wow, I see what you're saying now. Wow, never noticed that. No to Michelle, and she's going to be very upset that she can't go out to dinner with Richard and Larry. The clerk is so appreciative and says, you know, what do I owe you? And Larry's like, oh, please, you don't owe me a thing. He's like, wow, because that piss was worth $10. That was a $10 piss. So at home, this is where Larry and Leon come up with this business idea. And I think this is where Leon goes, man, that'd be a great app. You know, you have to go to the bathroom, you open the app and you call someone to come over to you, and you know, you relieve people to go to the bathroom. At this point, I was like, yeah, what boss wouldn't like that? Just anybody who can sign up for an app, come into my place of business and take over this employee's position who I hired and trained.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, sure, you do it. You do this job. Leon's line here about, he's like, oh my, you know how much I would pay for that? You know how many times I've had to go in a Gatorade bottle because I had to go so bad? You know how many times I've drank out of a Gatorade bottle? Once. That I'd done that in? Once. I like that. The name they came up with at first is Too Punny, which is Poober, which is not bad, but again, it's too punny. And I think Leon even says it's too close to Uber. And I was like, that's the idea, Leon. That was the whole idea. But then the name they come up with is Gotta Go, which is a better name because
it's
not derivative.
Name. Yeah, it is
Gotta
a good
go.
Name.
So over at Becky's, the house is in disarray. I think that's what you were kind of pointing at.
Well, I'm pointing at the nature of the house outside. There's numbers falling off the address.
Yeah.
There's a distant police siren, which is obviously added in post to make it seem... Huh, this isn't a great area.
Yeah, kind of weird. Maybe it's just kind of up and coming. You know, it's like the next thing that's going to be developed, and it's on like the cusp of that boom.
But if it's something up and coming, the value's not going to be there yet. The value's not going to be appreciated already.
Yeah, it is weird. I mean, I could see it being a house that, like, the worst house on a nice block, or what's become a nice block, like the last house that is not been flipped, really. You know, you could probably look at it that way, but yeah, the siren noise is kind of a weird aspect of it that I agree with you. I didn't expect it to see a garbage dump, you know.
Yeah,
I've certainly been the worst house on the block before. You know, I'm the house that like does not cut the lawn as regularly as everybody else. Like, I don't get off on that like every other suburban dad. You know, I kind of feel Becky's side that way, like being the worst house on an otherwise nice block, but yeah, it doesn't seem like it is a nice neighborhood yet, but maybe it was even worse when Larry bought it. So the house is in disarray, of course. Still living there and back for another episode is the now famous Caitlin Olson. She was not famous when she was on the first time as Cheryl's sister, which we were kind of you know, excited to see. She, I guess, was technically famous in season 6 in 2007 because Always Sunny had been on a couple years by then, but I wonder if Always Sunny was that like an immediate hit. I mean, I know it's been on for like, you know, whatever 16 seasons now, so yeah, I wonder if this was the most famous that she had been in her run of the show.
I would say so, because I mean, Always Sunny itself wasn't even, I mean, I was a fan of the early seasons whenever it was on, and I don't remember watching it until like season 3, maybe season 4.
Yeah.
They didn't even have Danny DeVito until season 2 because they were going to cancel the show.
Yeah.
And then they're like, we need a star. We need someone marketable.
Danny DeVito. Danny DeVito on the phone.
I don't know. They explained it at one point. I don't remember the decision to get Danny DeVito of all people. Maybe he was available. and affordable.
Yep.
But it worked. It saved the
FX
show.
Money.
And now they're on like season fucking what, 19?
I know. It really was one of those little shows that could, that probably benefited from being on FX because they were like, what the hell else do we have? Let's just, this show costs nothing. There's one location. So, you know, they rarely leave.
In the name of the show. Yeah. One location. 16 seasons now.
Okay. Yeah. That's incredible. But yeah, they rarely leave this bar. We make it for pennies. The cast is not famous. Let's just keep it for another couple seasons or so. And thank goodness they did. Yeah. But I would say, like, as recognizable as all those people are, I don't think I could name the actors that play all of them besides Charlie Day, and only because, you know, she's the one female lead, Caitlin Olsen.
You could definitely name someone else because he was in one of both of our favorite shows, AP Bio.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember. Oh, Rob?
That wasn't him.
Rob? Oh, wait, but there is a Rob McElhinney,
Rob is
right?
The other one. Rob is the guy who plays Mac.
And why can't I remember his name? Oh, Dennis? Dennis is his name on the show, isn't it?
Yes.
Damn it. I don't remember. Tell me what it is.
Dennis is played by Glenn Howerton.
Glenn Howerton, yeah, okay.
And Mac is played by Rob McElhenney.
Yeah, okay. And then Charlie Day and Caitlin Olsen, of course. But yeah, but so I'd venture to say that they're not necessarily household names at this point, but they're just kind of like people, except maybe Charlie Day. I would say he's probably the most famous out of all of them. But, you know, maybe even that's arguable. So, and by the way, I hate to spoil it, this is Caitlin Olsen's final appearance on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah,
man.
No more Sister Becky. Larry's worried that the house looks like shit because they're trying to sell it, you know, and this is not how you show a house that you're trying to sell. You make it look nice. And she's also day drinking. He proposes that they split. No, she can keep the profit. He'll get back his initial investment. She keeps the profit, which in the LA real estate world probably still had to be a stellar deal. Like maybe even in the millions, you know, depending on where this was. But she like starts crying. She says no and just starts crying, just like bawling and wailing immediately. And so Larry gives in immediately just to stop her from crying. And she just like jumps all over him and they just start making out hardcore. Like it is on. So over at Jeff's, Larry pretty much reveals that they had sex. And it's at this point that Cheryl and Susie walk in, and Larry hedges his bets until, you know, and she's like, did you have sex with my sister? And I love how much he hedges his bets until he's literally forced to confess. Because, did you have sex with my sister? Who said that? She did. What'd she say? She said you had sex. I was like, is there any lie he's like calculating? Can I still lie? No, I guess not. Yeah, I just loved that. It's like something my kids would do. It's like, did you eat all this? Where'd you hear that? Well, I didn't. I found the empty cookie box here. Like, all right, where was it? Like, well, it was in your room. Okay, all right. Like, let me see. What do you know at this point? Then John Hamm walks in, and he is, again, loving it. He's, like, taking notes, writing everything down, like, studying, and, like, laughing and chuckling at stuff, too. Like, laughing at the situation as if he's watching a show, like, oh, my God, this is great. No, keep going, please. and they're trying to get John Hamm to leave. They're like, it was really nice to meet you, but this is kind of a personal conversation. Now, could you please leave?
He's like, just pretend I'm not here. Fly on the wall.
But Larry leaves, too. He's like, you know what? I'm getting out of here anyway. Come on, John. And he like, I love that he has a little pet that's following him around in this episode. It's just too funny. So at dinner with Richard Lewis, Richard Lewis is irked that John Hamm is there and not Michelle. So he had to make up a story so that Michelle wouldn't want to come to the dinner. And the story he made up is that Larry has a bleeding rectum and he's embarrassed about having to talk about it and didn't want to talk about it in front of Michelle. And John Hamm accuses Richard Lewis of going over his app allotment and calls it essentially in you know, concurrently with Richard with Larry David, it's an unwritten rule. And Richard Lewis goes, oh my God, there's two Larry Davids, there's two of you now. And they both give a pretty good. And even
which,
John Hamm, yeah,
Tim, this is very reminiscent of another show that both you and I really like.
What was it?
I Think You Should Leave. one person can't eat all the loaded nachos.
Oh my gosh, yeah, you've gone over your loaded nacho allotment. Yeah.
If you order the loaded nachos to share, one person can't eat all the nachos with all the stuff on them.
Yeah, John Hamm is already turning into a little Larry David, though, where he's like, there's three of us. We're supposed to each get a third. And Richard is like, where is that? He's like, it's an unwritten rule. And they both say it at the same time.
I loved, though, Richard just saying, oh, God, two Larry Davids.
Yeah. And then they, pretty good. And John Hamm's like, pretty good. Yeah, this is great. So at home, Jeff has been kicked out of the house for defending Larry and his relationship with Becky. And so he would prefer Larry keep seeing Becky, because if you're still seeing Becky, I can't go home. So go on to Becky's. And so that's where Larry was headed. And they start cleaning up, and, you know, Becky's getting new clothes, and even John Hamm is helping, you know, pick out the new clothes and stuff like that. And the house gets sold. And everybody embraces it. It's, you know, again, I'm still loving the John Hamm, because Larry and Becky hug, and then John Hamm like hugs on top of them, like group hug style. And Larry drops Becky off at the airport to go on a ski trip, I guess, with some of her awesome profit from this house. Driving in the car with Leon, Larry is talking about this bleeding rectum story that he has to play around along with now. And Leon has a solution? Why didn't I write that? Oh, they don't know what the solution is. But they stop at a parking lot to advertise Gotta Go. And at this point now, as you kind of alluded to, it is just a business card situation. You call me, you know, they're really pounding the pavement and trying to find these people who are trapped, like the newsstand guy, like the parking lot guy. And the parking lot guy takes him up on it immediately. Just stand right here it's a dollar a minute with a minimum of 5 minutes. So a minimum, $5 minimum, even if you know, only take 2 minutes to piss or whatever. And the guy takes him up on it immediately. So boom, Leon's in business. He's even, taken over for a shoe shine guy and gives a spit shine to the guy.
Yeah.
Which I love.
Spitting on the guy's shoes. And he's like, hey, what the fuck are you doing? It's a spit shine. Spit on your shoe.
I love that he thought that was actual spit. Like, maybe in the like depression era, a spit shine was an actual thing, but there's no spit involved now. And that's another good, this is a perfect example of why this business should fail, because bosses should not want an untrained person coming in. Like, if you just stood there and said, hey, the shoe shine guy's coming right back, he'll be right back, I can't give you a shoe, but he's doing the jobs, he's taking money, he's like, it's just not appropriate. You know, he relieves a valet who has to go to the bathroom, and he's making fat stacks. He's making money. At Richard Lewis's dinner party at Michelle's place, she's picked out a brand new dining room set, and so they're having a dinner party, I guess, kind of in honor of that. Michelle is just laser focused on Larry's rectum. She just cannot, she can't stop thinking about it, staring at it. Even for the dinner, she has given him a cheap wooden chair instead of one of the nice new plush dining chairs that she has purchased. And Larry threatens Richard Lewis to make this right, straighten out the bleeding rectum thing, and you better get me a chair. And if he doesn't get a chair, he's going to blow the whole story up. And so Michelle relents when she hears that Larry would appreciate it if, now that his rectum has stopped bleeding, he could have a real chair. And so the appreciate it really works. You know, he said he'd appreciate it. She's like, oh, wow, he said that? Okay, well. But Richard Lewis is going to be in trouble if he bleeds on it. John Hamm, I noticed, by the way, he's at this dinner party as well. And he's now wearing glasses that look like Larry David's. Did you notice that?
I did.
The exact same.
This, yeah.
So he starts explaining the movie plot is this Larry David character has this hit sitcom that he stole from some other country, and he just ripped off this sitcom idea, and it's his claim to fame. And Larry is pissed off now that this is supposedly based on him. And he's like, no, it's not. It's not supposed to be you. It's only based on you. The guy's name is Lawrence Dean, not Larry David. And Richard Lewis finds a chair. What do you know? They found the extra chair. There wasn't seven in the dining set, like Michelle tried to say.
I loved Richard Lewis's like explanation here. He's like, it was covered up with a dust cover. I thought it was the ghost of my grandmother.
Yeah. And Larry gets in a fight with Cousin Andy, who's there, over the Well, first of all, they fight over the term Lazy Susan, because they're both trying to get the shrimp and, like, you know, moving this thing around in the middle. And Cassie says the term has racist and sexist connotations, which now I guess I kind of want to know.
I feel like we got to add that to homework.
This is homework.
I've got no idea.
But yeah, now I have to know, because I'm going to guess that's probably true.
You know what? It's probably safe to assume so. If it's coming from, like, the 1700s or the 1800s, it's probably just safe to assume.
Yeah. And
or
like
even
I
the 1900s or 2000s, honestly.
Like, I can't say rule of thumb anymore without thinking of the beginning of Boondock Saints. Have you ever seen that?
I have, but I don't remember what rule of thumb is.
So the very beginning of the movie, they're working at, like, their meatpacking plant or whatever, and he's, like, training a new woman, and he goes, so the rule of thumb here is to, and she's like, wait a minute, rule of thumb? And she's like, like you were saying, in the 1800s, it was legal for men to beat their wives as long as they didn't use anything, you know, wider than their thumb.
Jesus Christ, yeah. Really?
And I don't know if that's true, but it's a good story, right? Yeah, but then Sean Patrick Flannery goes, what? You can hardly do any damage with that. Should have called it rule of wrist. And they get in a big fight. And and so I've always, I never looked up to verify if that's true, but it makes me think of that every time. I don't know if I've stopped saying it for that reason, but I can't help but think about it every time. So it probably does give me pause, at least. And so they're having a fight over which direction the ambitious Susan, I got to admit, all the nicknames for the Susan, the Lazy Susan, cracked me up, but Ambitious Susan was my favorite. Oh, well, no, the Ambitious Susan only goes one way.
Oh my
God. John Hamm and Larry David are mocking the, you know, what to call the device. And
I did like how they settled on Ambidextrous Susan.
Ambidextrous Susan, which would go both ways, but she's not lazy. You can say that. And it ends up spinning to the point where the sauce on the Lazy Susan spins out and flies and lands right at rectum level, where Larry David's bleeding rectum would have been on the chair.
And of all people, I don't get why Larry is in trouble for this.
Yeah.
Like,
Andy deserves some.
Yeah. She deserves some of the blame. Yes.
Yeah, totally. And also, it's not, you know, it's not blood. So Richard Lewis shouldn't be in trouble with Michelle either, even though it is a stain on the chair at rectum level. She did say, if he bleeds, you're in trouble. But you know, he didn't bleed. He just got something else on it. She does still kick out Larry David, and as she calls him, Larry David Jr. Mm-hmm. And I love how excited he's like, what? You're getting kicked out too? And he's so excited about it. Hey, all right. All right. You're really getting, you know, you're really getting the hang of me, it seems like. What? You're getting kicked out too? All right. Okay. And they're like happy to get kicked out. In Larry David's office, Becky got hurt skiing, and Larry David is going, oh my gosh, I'll fly to Denver right now. I'm on the first flight. I'll be on the first flight to see you. But he calls his travel agent, and the first flight he can get on is a middle seat in coach 19E. There's, you know, that's like the noon flight. There's nothing on the 2 or the 4 or the 6. In fact, the next first class flight is tomorrow at 9 p.m. And so it is tomorrow, right? Yeah, I think it's, yeah, tomorrow.
No, I think it's tonight.
It's the same day at 9 p.m.? Okay, 9 p.m.
Same day at 9 p.m., yeah.
So he'll be on the fifth flight out to Denver. I can't believe there are that many L.A. to Denver flights, but geez, maybe it's hub or something.
Yeah, it's Metro City to Metro City, right?
Yeah, I guess so. At home, Leon calls for Larry while he's packing to take the newsstand gig because the guy is just taking too long to use the bathroom. Jeff won't help because he's already in his sweat, so the day is over. I totally get this feeling, although I've done it, I will get out of my sweats like in an emergency, but I hate it. I'm like, oh God, I'm already in my jammies. You know,
yeah.
I can't leave after I'm in my jammies.
The jammies are a sacred thing. Once you're in jammies, it's hard to get out of jammies.
Yeah. Like the other day, I'll tell you the reason I got out of my jammies was my daughter hurt her foot and I had to go get her a brace at CVS. You know, that's the kind of like thing that will get me out of my jammies. But whenever I have to like, oh God, like, no, I'm with Jeff on this one. Unfortunately, when I'm in my sweats, the day is over. And so Larry has to go. And the guy is taking so long that he ends up handing it off to John Hamm, handing off the newsstand gig to John Hamm. So at LAX, Larry explains why he's cutting through TSA as he's doing it. And he offends two people who happen to both be African-American, asking if they are a couple.
And I think another, like a revisited version of the very beginning of this, where he's asking the family of Chinese people their opinions on Chinese food.
And so two black people standing near each other must be a couple. Although they were standing really close. I think Larry
is. They were standing pretty close to each other.
I don't know if Larry's not right in this situation, but he doesn't deserve what he got. He didn't deserve anything more than like,
I wouldn't say he's right, but he explains himself very poorly. Because he could clearly said, you were standing very close to each other. I thought you were a couple.
Yeah, exactly.
Without making it a race thing.
Which the fact that he did explain it that way, maybe it was a race thing. But they were standing, they made it look like they were a couple. Like, I was like, oh, well, no, any two people standing together, I thought would be a couple like that. And he ends up being pulled for a random search that he thinks is because the TSA agent is also black.
Which is very funny because it's the second he puts his boarding pass down and the agent's like, oh, look at that. Random search.
I believe that it was random.
Do you? I don't.
I believe it was random because Larry's like, but because the guy does say it doesn't have anything to do with that. And I kind of believe him. I think it, but it would be funnier, I guess, if he made a random search. Maybe I'm dumb for thinking that it was random.
I don't think it's random at all. Yeah. I think that's where the joke comes in.
I guess you're right. Oh, what do you know? Random search. He's like, it wasn't, it was an honest mistake. And he's like, it wasn't because of that. So he gets pulled for a random search and misses his flight. At the newsstand, Cheryl shows up, and John Hamm takes this as more occasion to get some great research from someone who was married and knew Larry better than anybody maybe for so long. And so he abandons his post. And
because he has no idea why Larry asked him to do this in the first place. He doesn't know what gotta go is.
Yeah, that's true. But he was there with him the first time. He should have maybe put two and two together, like, oh, the last time Larry was here. He knows that Larry doesn't just work at a newsstand, but Larry should have explained that it's the same reason as before. But yeah, John Hamm just abandons his post. And a skater comes by and steals what I would say is about $6 worth of magazines, Ted.
I mean, do you know how expensive magazines are in 2024, Tim?
Yeah, I guess maybe you're right. Some of them can, they can get
up probably like $12 or $13.
They look pretty thick.
He takes two entire magazines, one of which he just flips behind him and throws on the ground.
I know. I love how the vandalism, like, this is what conservatives think does happen in cities. Like, you probably could leave that newsstand for, I don't know, an hour, and people would come by and they'd go, oh, where's the clerk? I was going to buy this. Oh, well, I guess I'll leave. And they'd probably put the magazine back. You know, like, I think that's probably what most, but conservatives think this really is like,
the second
you turn around, a skater in baggy clothes comes by.
It's always going to be skaters.
And murders you. Yeah.
And I would even venture a claim like, yeah, maybe you lose like one that someone steals. But I would think for every maybe like two that happens, there's probably some one person who does pick it up and they're like, all I have is a 10 on me and leaves cash at whatever desk they're at.
Yeah, I would venture to say this would go unnoticed by most. Like, you'd probably drive by, not see it. Even if you went there regularly, you'd go, oh, there's usually a clerk here. I wonder where he is. Like, when I see something that looks unattended, I'm like, somebody is watching this right now. That's my first suspicion. Like, you know, I guess I don't have the heart of a criminal or whatever where I'm like, oh, great, I can get away with something. I go, if I tried anything here, I know I'd get busted right away. Somebody is watching this. There's something going on. There's a truck around the corner. Somebody has their eye on this. No one just leaves anything unattended like this. I love that immediately a skater comes by and steals a couple magazines. And then it's just the vandalism of it. He just chucks it. Yeah, man, I'm a slacker. This is what I do. Steal, like, home decor magazines and just trash them. And so at home, Larry has missed his flight. And he gets in a fight with Jeff over this imaginary accident over pizza cheese. What if I dropped my, what if I got hit by a car? What were you doing in the middle of the street? I was trying to pick pizza, the cheese that fell off my pizza. Oh, you were going to eat the cheese. No, I wasn't. They get an argument about that instead of what they really should be fighting about, which I thought was hilarious. And just great improv that they kept yes-anding each other. It was just a textbook, improv. And Leon's there just laying on the couch. He's like, what happened to you? What happened to, I'm not going to help you out at all anymore. Don't even call me. He's like, what? Oh, I quit that. So now even Leon has quit. Like, after one tiny setback, The app will never be. It won't make it out of the business card runway. And now Larry is going to be on. He's like, no, I got to be on the first flight tomorrow. Well, I'm on the second flight because there was no first class. And we return to the newsstand as the clerk comes back to find it. It did get completely ransacked in his absence. I mean, I don't know what he was doing
total,
in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally gone. But if he was in the bathroom long enough for Larry to be worried about catching his flight, long enough for John Hamm to get there, yeah, long enough for John Hamm to get fed up, and long enough for it to get ransacked, my guy had to be shitting for an hour.
Yeah, yeah, there's no doubt. It was a bad one. It was definitely a bad one. So at Mocha Joe's with Cheryl, John Hamm has some complaints, the same complaints like Larry, the wobbly table, the scone that's more like a muffin, the cold coffee. And he runs off Cheryl and ends up being banned from Mocha Joe's. So he has truly morphed into the actual Larry David. In Denver, about 24 hours after Becky's accident, you know, it should be just like an hour-long flight for Larry to get there if he truly was on the first one. But now it's about 20 hours later. And his, again, hedging his bets with like, how much do I have to say before she'll go, oh, okay. Because he goes, well, I couldn't get on the first flight. There were no seats for me. No seats for me. And so, but he admits that, you know, he has to sit in first class because he has a bleeding rectum. He needs a nice, comfortable seat, I guess, for his bleeding rectum. And Becky kicks him out, won't even let him have her Jell-O that she's not going to eat. Frolic starts to play. And that's the end of the episode. I have to mention, in the credits, since we talked about how famous she is, there's no Caitlin Olsen as Becky.
Really?
Whatever Cheryl's last name is in the show. Yeah, I know. I thought that was because some other guest stars, like John Hamm, gets John Hamm as John Hamm or whatever. But Caitlin Olsen does not get the same credit, which I think she deserved. But
I think she absolutely deserves, at the very least, a Caitlin Olsen as Becky, whatever her last name is.
Yeah.
Like you said.
I mean, it was in with everybody else, but I mean like the, you know, J.B. Smoove as Leon Black. Yeah, I mean that like that single title card credit that like Richard Lewis as Richard Lewis gets. I think Caitlin Olsen deserved that. She was, of course, in the credits with everybody else, but I'm like, geez, you know, okay. she's like a real star
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I can see her getting a single title card.
Yeah, I guess because the character started there. You can't bump her up, mm-hmm. even though I bet that happened to Leon. I bet Leon wasn't always... He wasn't always in the, you know, in the title card credits, but
probably not.
Well, if I was your agent, Caitlin, we'd have words with with Larry David.
Okay, well, Tim, what do we got for homework this week?
I just wrote down Lazy Susan. Should I feel as obviously bad about saying it as I did in continuing that part of the podcast? And what should we call it? You know, is there like a non-generic, or I mean, is there a generic term we can call the ambitious Susan from now on?
I can't wait to hear about it and feel bad about it. All right, what do you like for cover art this week?
Man, tough one. What did we have? I mean, maybe Larry at the newsstand with someone with Larry and John Hamm. Larry and John Hamm getting kicked out was like, you know, what is a hilarious segment of this whole episode. So them like standing and being happy about getting kicked out was pretty funny.
Yeah, I loved the dramatic shot of the newsstand guy coming back and finding the whole thing ransacked because he's just standing in the middle of the screen and just shoulders drooped. It's like, what happened? My work.
And like
his masterpiece.
He's totally fucked too. Cause what is he going to tell the guy that owns the newsstand? Like, oh, well I paid a guy to watch it while I went to the bathroom, which I know is against policy, but also there's gotta be a labor law, at least in California, that you need to have bathroom breaks.
I mean. Yeah, at the very least, like where do all those magazines go whenever you close up? It's not like you box them all up. No, there are garage doors that you open and close. You fucking close those and you go to the bathroom.
You should be able to do that for, you know, a set amount of time. And again, like if you go over it, whatever, but there's got to be something written in labor law somewhere that says everyone gets a 10-minute break per 8-hour shift or something, you know?
Yes, yes, exactly. For cover art, it's got to have to be something with John Hamm. You're right. Maybe the visual Richard Lewis, like putting his head in his hands as Larry.
Oh, you mean John Hamm?
John.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
oh,
yeah, as Larry and Richard, John, yeah. The three of them at dinner. as Larry and John Hamm are looking at each other, and they're both going pretty good, because you can still see Richard Lewis just like, ugh.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. All right. let's see what we can do about this week's description.
All right.
So we had a prominent actor studies Larry for an upcoming role, comma, while Larry stokes a sibling rivalry and helps Leon with a new app, period.
I mean, I don't have a problem with all of it. I mean, you could change app to business idea, but they...
That's splitting hairs at that.
They do have design, and it does start as, man, that'd be a good app. And like, yeah, how did Uber start? Probably as a number on. I remember the first iteration of what eventually became Uber. There was a service where I grew up in Virginia that was like, here are the restaurants we'll go to that don't deliver, but we will deliver the food from these restaurants. And that, you know, I'm not saying that became Uber, but that idea became Uber. You know, I was like, oh, restaurants that don't do delivery, someone delivers them. Boom, that's an app. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
So I mean, this did start. Everything started as just a from the ground up. So it was an app idea called Gotta Go. They came up with a name for the app. So I'm happy with that.
I'm happy with that.
Okay.
We actually had that in my hometown as well. It was one kid. He was a stoner, yeah, and he would drive your food to you as fast as possible in his Subaru Impreza.
Nice. I wish I could remember what it called. It was like, I don't remember what the business name was called.
Ours was called, because the town was Dubois, ours was called Dub Delivery.
Nice. Oh, my gosh. And it's like, that's a pot thing, too, isn't it? Something with dub. I know we're both not smokers, but...
No, not that I can think of.
Isn't that marijuana lingo?
No, dub is for win, like W, like dub, get the dub, like in Fortnite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not back then. No one said that back then.
No, you might be thinking of dab.
There's got to be some parental website. Oh, a dub of weed is a slang term that's used in the U.S. to describe $20 worth of weed.
I've never heard this before in my life.
We're not pot smokers. So, I mean, I'm not. Have you ever been?
You said that like the biggest cop. Ted, we're not pot smokers.
We don't toke the reefer, okay?
We do not partake in the marijuanas.
That's from marijuanaseeds.nl, and this is from dictionary.com. Huh. Dub for double was a slang for $20, double 10. In the 1940s.
In the 40s? Wow.
And for $20 worth of a drug in 2010s. So,
okay.
Oh, as seen in some hip-hop lyrics.
All right. I did not know.
So there we go.
I was not aware.
I mean, the fact that you mentioned he was a stoner made me think of that. So now we can ask people for dubs, and we know what we're talking about. But I got to mention, too, when I was a freshman in college, 1999, we used AOL Instant Messenger, which I believe you're familiar with. We have talked about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a screen name, and I can't remember what it was called, but you could send an IM to this screen name and like say, hey, can you bring me whatever? And they would bring it to you, and for like a, you know, for the money and a little bit on top. But it got shut down by the university for like running a business on campus. Yeah.
God.
Which you're not allowed to do. You know, but I thought that was funny. I can't remember what it was called. It was like, you know, whatever, Mason Delivery or something like that. But same kind of idea. I mean, maybe that guy went on to create Uber or DoorDash. We don't know.
So I guess we can't do anything about the description, but
yeah, the description's already pretty good.
Yeah, maybe the robots can, Tim. Let's get into Curb Your Enthusiasm.
All right, please write a synopsis of episode 8 of season 10 of Curb Your Enthusiasm, Elizabeth, Margaret, and Larry. In Elizabeth, Margaret, and Larry, Larry contends with Elizabeth Banks. All right, you're already... I was a little confused, honestly, by the title because I forgot the whole crown element of it. And even John Hamm mentions, like, wait, is this about the crown? That show's so good, isn't it? That's why I think this must have been, like, the height of crown fever or whatever. But even I was clueless about the episode title afterwards. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot that tiny little detail that they mention. It seems really shoehorned in. Larry contends with Elizabeth Banks, who takes issue with his views on shoes. Meanwhile, Larry's relationship with a fellow passenger on a flight takes an unexpected turn, leading to an unusual encounter. Additionally, Larry becomes entangled in a dispute over a trash bin, prompting him to take drastic measures to resolve the conflict.
Wow.
What in the world, dude?
That is
bad. I mean, now you're just really making stuff up. It's never... At least you tried, like, some semblance of a thread of plot, but that was, like, all over the place. A flight, the trash bin, Elizabeth Banks, shoes, views on shoes. Man, one of the worst, I gotta say.
I'm pro bringing Elizabeth Banks into it, but
yeah,
I mean, yeah. It's very odd.
Yeah.
All right. Tim, finally, did you like this episode?
I did. I hated how much I loved this episode because it's going to make the end of the season that much tougher because I think it deserves a full star. Hilarious, and it all wraps up nicely at the end. And I love John Hamm in it. I mean, that probably propelled it from maybe a star low to a total star episode. He was funny in this. I got to give it a full star, and I'm dreading the end of this season because it's just been stellar. As far as I think, I have like 4 or 5 stars now at this point, maybe 4 full stars, which is I haven't done in a long time.
I have been waiting for the John Hamm episode because every article I see, I don't read them, but I see, you know, headline and thumbnail of best Curb Your Enthusiasm guest stars ever.
Yeah.
Without fail, John Hamm is a lot of the time the thumbnail of that article. And
wow.
I'm like, man, I can't wait until we get to the John Hamm episode. It's got to be good if so many lists are saying he's the best guest star. Really? The best out of everyone? And I don't think this disappointed. I gave this a full star as well.
Yes.
I thought this was so funny.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know about best guest star myself. I'd have to think about that and recap some of the, you know, remember some of the other guest stars. But I mean, I could see him definitely being up there. You know, I know why he's in the conversation because he was hilarious.
I would have to look at another person's opinion with a ranked list of guest stars to see if I agree with it and be like, well, no, this person should be down here. This person should be up there, something like that.
This person doesn't belong on the list at all.
Yeah. Why is this person in the top 25 at all? Yeah, something like that. All right, Tim, next week we have got season 10, episode 9, Beep Panic. Original air date, March 15th, 2020. And if you are looking in TV Guide that night because you are home and you are quarantined and you're home for the next 2 weeks, no work, and then the pandemic will be done with. If you're looking in TV Guide that night, you're going to see Larry finds himself indebted to a struggling waitress and draws the ire of Mocha Joe.
Oh, great. We're going to get some Mocha Joe movement on the Spite store.
We get some Mocha Joe movement.
I like it. All right. Cool. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that is it.
All right. For No Hugging, No Learning, I'm Tim Murphy.
I'm Ted Hollowell. Be good.